Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. This week is full of things to do in Milwaukee, and Thursday night is particularly jammed. Before the break, we heard about the debut production of Bronzeville Arts Ensemble, and there's also the Milwaukee City birthday party that takes place at the Grain Exchange.
But if movies are more your thing, and in particular animation, there's something for you on Thursday night, too. Tim Burton's classic film, The Nightmare Before Christmas, is getting a screening at UWM's Union Theater. But in addition to seeing the movie, you'll also have a chance to meet two of the original animators.
Husband and wife Owen Clady and Angie Glocka are from Milwaukee, but they spent 25 years in California working on films, commercials, and TV shows. The list of their credits include James and the Giant Peach, Toy Story, Night at the Museum 2, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, and, as we mentioned, The Nightmare Before Christmas. They joined me in the studio recently, and Angie explained how she first started in animation.
I saw Fantasia when I was a junior in high school, and I decided, that's it, I have to be an animator. But of course, how do you do that? It just so happened that there was one guy, Pete Loft, brilliant illustrator, who at age 19 decided he was going to start his own animation business right here in Milwaukee. His father was the leader of the fine arts quartet at UWM, as a matter of fact, Abram Loft. This was 30 years ago. So he asked people to paint cells, and this is when you were painting cells. And so he said he'd teach you. So up in his little bedroom in his dad's house, he taught people how to paint cells.
And so when you say cells, that is like the single frame that, of an animation?
That's the old style, old-fashioned Disney cell-drawn animation. You have to do the drawings on this clear acetate and then paint on the opposite side. You paint it with this basically thick acrylic paint. And he would do commercials, and he'd need a crew, and he paid us $5 an hour, which was very generous at the time. And it was fantastic, but there's really not much career options in the Midwest, really. So I decided to go to the University of Wisconsin, take every film class I could think of. And I learned a lot about it, but there was still not a career path to becoming an animator. So I kind of decided, yeah, I think I need to move to the West Coast if I really want to get involved. And then I saw Star Wars, and I thought that was it. I have to be a part of that. I saw the matte paintings, the sculptures, the construction, the special effects, and I just thought, I have to do it. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I just decided I have to be involved in that.
And so, Owen, what about you? Similar story?
Kind of. I actually did a couple little stop-motion things with a friend of mine in high school, but never gave it a real thought of anything, you know, as a career at all. Went to college at Madison for the first 2 years and then came back here and got my degree in architecture at the UWM, but knew by the time I got it that I really wasn't cut out to be an architect either. So I kind of drifted, floated for a few years, working odd jobs, working at Columbian Artworks, this making desk calendars and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And finally, when I was like 25, thought, the only thing I really love is animation, that I would see the tourneys of animation that would come to the Oriental every year, these collections of award-winning festival films. And I just loved those. I was so amazed by the range of things you could do that was so far beyond just the Disney or the Warner Brothers cartoon stuff. It was just inspiring. But like Angie, I had no idea how to do it. So I just looked in the phone book, and the only animation company in the state was Pete Loft. And I went there and met him. And he offered me a job, and that's where I met Angie, painting cells across from each other in a commercial.
True love was born.
Well, yeah. It was like, I said to him, we started dating, and I said to him, you know, like, my dream, and it was like, yeah, I could do that. And I was kind of like, what? Are you kidding me? He would actually, he didn't even hesitate.
Moving to California.
I didn't even know that was something that you would ever consider. I just said, I really want to do that.
So you did.
Yeah.
You moved to California. It's sort of like a John Steinbeck novel, but happier.
Yeah.
And how did you get into the first thing? I mean, were you just knocking on doors, or did you know people?
Well, this crazy thing is that I can't really draw very well, which makes being an animator really tough. So we get out to California, and I had been working in a film lab here, Kluge Film Lab, doing, you know, film stuff. And we got out there, and I got a job in a film lab there, and I tried getting animation jobs, but I can't really draw. So it was kind of, I didn't go anywhere. But we were in San Francisco and just loving being in San Francisco for the first few years and having fun. But then eventually, little by little, I was getting more and more, well, I'm still not animating. And we were involved with the animation community out there. There's an international group called ASIFA, which is the International Animation Society, and there was a local chapter, so we'd be hooked into those people. And through that, I think we found an opportunity to learn computer graphics when computer graphics was very young. And
when it was all spreadsheets and numbers.
You weren't actually drawing at that point.
No, it was all a big spreadsheet. It was like a big 100 columns with figures that marked points. And you'd organize the points.
So we started learning computer graphics, and that was cool. But then his company went belly up, and we were just kind of still drifting around. And then the big break came when we heard that Art Clokey, who created Gumby back in the 50s, was setting up a studio in Sausalito. Lorimar Productions had ordered, 33 half-hour episodes of Gumby. So we went over there hoping to get some kind of a job doing, assistant work, because most of the stuff, because I can't draw, most of the stuff I did at UWM was stop-motion animation, puppets and clay animation and things. So I thought I could maybe get some assistant job, and got hired as an animator right off the bat. And Angie went over either the same day, I forget, hers very soon.
I actually went first.
Maybe you went
first.
Okay.
Actually, I had been working in publishing. I actually worked at the Pacific Stock Exchange. I decided, okay, if I'm going to be an animator, I'm just going to have to do this. I'm going to give it all up. I might not make a nickel, but I'm going to do it. So I quit my job and went back to San Francisco State University. Did offer a lot of animation courses, not exactly a degree program, but almost. So they taught me, I was able to do basically a 4-day, 1-weekend stop motion project. And then I saw, among other projects, I saw this. It was actually an ad in the newspaper. Do you want to be an animator?
And you said, yes.
Yeah. I took it for real, but I tell you, I went there and they hired me and I couldn't believe it. And they said, please tell all your classmates to come and apply here and do a test. We need everyone. And I went back to my class and I could not get a single person, not one person to go and test because they didn't believe it was real. And there were all these rumors flying around about how it was just a joke and it was just, nobody would do it. I think I did tell you then after, and then you went and they
and
said.
And it wasn't a joke.
No. Not at
no.
all.
No.
It was an amazing opportunity. It was one of those great, great things that you find once in a lifetime almost.
I want to pull back just a bit and talk about animation itself, because we started off talking about the simple Disney slides. We've also talked a little bit about stop motion.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of characters sitting in front of us here on the desk, and there'll be pictures on the website of them. What are they? What kind of animation is this? Go ahead.
There's
either one.
Three basic kinds of animation. There's the old traditional Disney animation, which is hand-drawn, and then they get put onto these acetate cells and inked and painted there. And that's what you're used to seeing as the traditional thing. Then there's stop-motion animation, where you're animating puppets, which can be either all clay puppets, which is what claymation is, or they can be foam rubber puppets or other materials. Or there's a wide variety of things you can do, but the point being that they're actual three-dimensional little characters, like the guys we have here, about 6 inches high, and you build sets and you have actual lights. It's kind of like a live-action shoot, but in miniature. So we have lights and cameras and a set. And then the third way is computer graphics, which is actually all done in the computer. The modeling of the characters, the lighting, the animation, it's all done through keyboards and mouse, basically. And, it's a virtual world, so it gives you amazing opportunities. You can do incredible stuff, but it's not as tangible as stop motion, which is one of the reasons we love it, is the stop motion, you're actually handling little characters.
Yeah, you have to actually move them into different positions,
right?
And then film that and then keep moving it.
Right. All the puppets will have some sort of a armature inside, either wire or these very beautifully engineered ball and socket armatures. They're like the skeleton that holds its position. And so you can move the arm a tiny amount and it'll hold that position, and you take a frame and you move everything again, you know, another tiny increment, take another frame.
How closely do animation and special effects work together? Are they part of the same basic idea?
Yeah, they are. In Nightmare Before Christmas, if you wanted to have something flying around, like, for instance, I did a scene where these little girls go to the tree and all the ornaments turn to bats. There's like 14 bats. They have to fly around and leave. They were all on wires. And there was this spaghetti of wire pathways off camera so that each one could be on a track and fly in a different path while I flapped the wings. But in the computer, it's just all virtual. I mean, you just take the mouse and put it where you want. And in stop motion, you're fighting gravity. And you're also trying to hide the things that support the rigs. And
the mechanicals.
The mechanicals, yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And that's a big part of the trick, is to hide those. One of the tricks, if you have something flying, while you take your frame, you tap it so that it's going swishing just ever so slightly so that it blurs. That hides the wire. But it also creates a blur effect for the thing that's flying. But if you have it in the computer, you just say, put on the blur effect, and it blurs.
And it does it for you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, special effects have been around since the beginning of film. They're anything that's basically not shot live action with a camera. Special effects would be stop motion, like King Kong, or, you know, in the early Star Wars movies, the Tauntauns and the Imperial Walkers and everything were all done in stop motion. Now most of it's done in computer graphics, but they're all considered special effects.
You said you prefer these little guys and working with the stop motion because it's so tangible.
Right.
Do you get a similar pleasure from the computer at all, just because of the range of things you can do with it?
I do.
Yeah.
When you're in stop motion, you totally are immersed in a fantasy world, which is really, really fun.
The computer's the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And it's this tiny little screen, but it's really fun. I mean, computer animation is really fun, and you have so much freedom. It's just that it's still a lot of spreadsheets and numbers and technical know-how. You have to wrangle the computer. When I was at Sony working on, like, Monster House, 50% of all the people that worked there were technical assistants to write the tools every single day. And then the other 50% created the animation.
So you find that you have to actually invent the thing you need to create the animation?
Well, we don't, but they have people
somebody
who do
does.
That. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there are off-the-shelf packages like Maya that smaller studios will use, but the bigger studios usually have a whole in-house department of people who are writing all these various programs to make things supposedly run smoother, although half the time it seems like they make things just more complicated.
Yeah, there's always a debate about whether computer animation is faster than stop motion or not. Some people think it pretty much takes the same amount of time and money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
because you're having to
write all the programs.
Yeah.
And test all the programs.
Right.
And then see if it works.
Oh, it's huge.
From your professional perspective, does it depend on the film what you think works better? Which one, whether it's stop motion or computer? And I'm thinking about it more specifically working with live actors. Mm-hmm. When you have to integrate live action with animation and special effects, do you have one that you think works better?
Well, before CG, stop motion was kind of your only option. You know, in the 60s, Disney integrated traditional cell animated characters with live action films.
Well,
but now it's all CG
because
it's really hard to make stop motion animation integrate as well with live action as CG can do.
It's a lot easier with CG. Like at Night at the Museum, I did shots with Ben Stiller and the dinosaur, and I don't know how that would have been done with stop motion.
Right.
But
yeah.
It was
so they
really
have
easy.
Their place. Each one has their place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Just computer graphics has taken over most special effects, and stop motion now is used primarily for its look. It's a distinct, special look that people love, and it has that very tactile feeling, and you can, you know, the audience, even if they don't know what they're looking at sometimes, they get it. It feels different because you can tell as people have their hands on these things. It's very man-made, you know. It's not slick computer stuff. When computer graphics was first developing, we were afraid it was just going to totally kill stop motion animation. And it did to some degree. You know, the Pillsbury Doughboy used to always be stop motion, and then boom, he went to computer graphics and never looked back because it's so much easier to do him. He's a very difficult character to do in stop motion. But it's kept on, and now there's still, you know, there's Leica in Portland that makes really great films. They're, you know, they're doing well, and there's smaller films and TV things being done all the time in stop motion. So it's carved out its niche, and it
hasn't gone away. Yeah.
No.
But the film that you're going to be speaking at on Thursday night, Nightmare Before Christmas, is that where these guys are from?
Yes.
What's the idea? You're going to be having an entire, we'll see the film, but there's also extras, right?
Right. After the film, we're talking, but we're going to just be up on the stage in the Union Theater and just talk about the film and answer questions. We'll have a little Q&A. And we figure we're going to just have a few puppets and props and maybe a couple set pieces available for people just to look at and kind of get a sense of what they look like.
What it looks like in real life,
right,
as opposed to on the screen.
Right.
And to me, I always find that fascinating to see when you look at a prop and you look at a costume or a set piece, in this case, a puppet, and say, oh, that's what it looks like here. The magic of the filming is what takes it into that other realm.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and the lighting. For instance, we have one of the gates from Halloween Town, and they had a trouble lighting it so dark. They wanted a dark lighting, but then they can't read it with the film. So they invented a way of painting the light on the set pieces so that they could have low light, but it would still look lit. And it's interesting to see the set piece painted that way with the different shades of white to give it that white and gray to give it that lit look.
Which you wouldn't see unless it was under the right lights to...
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's fascinating to look at it that way. And just also just to see the texture and the fingers and the quality of the fabric. Everything has to be made so that it doesn't flap around. That's one of the things that you absolutely can't have in stop motion is that it moves by itself. So there's an enormous amount of R&D put into creating fabrics, treating props so that they don't move on their own. Like swish in the wind.
Right. You have to control everything.
Yeah, you have to have total control of everything within the film.
Because it can
frame.
Be like minutes between frames. You know, you can pose a puppet and then you move over to your next puppet. You could have 15 puppets on the stage at the same time. You don't want the arm to be drifting down. You don't want the belt to be flapping around. You don't want the hair to be moving on its own while you're working on another puppet.
I cannot thank you enough for stopping in and telling us a little bit about the fabulous careers that you've both had. Angie and Owen, thank you so much for your time.
Okay,
thank you. This is so fun.
Milwaukee natives Owen Claudy and Angie Glocka are animators as well as husband and wife. Claudy now teaches animation at UWM, and the two will be at the Union Theater Thursday night for a screening of Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, a film for which they were two of the original seven animators.
There's more information about the pair, as well as about the screening, at WUWM.com. And that wraps up Lake Effect today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks so much for joining us.
And I'm Bonnie North. Be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect. It's on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock.
What's this? What's this? There's color everywhere. What's this? There's white things in the air. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. Wake up, Jack. This isn't fair. What's this? What's this? What's this? There's something very wrong. What's this? There's people singing songs. What's this?